too. Happy holidays to you too as well, Steve. I hope you are able to enjoy them as much as possible this year.
Yeah, I will. Same with you. I will, as a matter of fact. All right. So first quarter, Jack and I look at each other. It's like it's 21-21. We're trying to think if we've ever done a 21-21 in the first quarter before.
Yeah, I think during the game I tweeted that this game was on pace to go into overtime tied at 168. So, because that was what? It was 42 points in 5 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Or 28 points. So yeah, 20 points in 5 minutes in the first 5 minutes of that game between, you know.
5 minutes and 10 seconds. It was 14-14. Yeah. So, but then I'll tell you what I thought really turned it, and it's subtle. But at one point, you know, they got a three and out. Then the next series, they got a first down and a play, but then three out after that. Then a three and out, three and out. So I started saying on the air, hey, Jack, they've only run 7 plays their last 2. They've only run 10 plays their last 3, 13 their last 4. I thought that's where they gained control, Marcus, when they actually gained control defensively, because you knew they had enough offense to beat this team.
Yeah, it felt a little bit, in a way, it felt a little bit like a bowl game, that start where it's teams that, you know, at this point both are saying, what the heck? You know, I don't know what Penn State, when they actually made their bowl decision, but, you know, obviously Illinois wasn't going to go to a game. So they came out, you know, with that, you know, devil may care kind of, let's go. And it worked for them a little bit. It gave them some energy. They got the turnover. They got the big play by Isaiah Williams. They got that, trick play that they ran. Got them the touchdowns. Those stops, I think those stops led to something like 10 punts. What, 10 punts in 11 drives or something like that. That once it kind of became clear that it was relatively one-note offense for Penn State to stop, and that I think the linebackers, especially Brandon Smith and the defensive tackles, got their feet set in that game. They knew that they just kind of had one run game really to stop. You know, Illinois wasn't going to beat Penn State, I don't think, passing. I don't know, what was it, 7 or 8 three and outs after that?
Yes.
I mean, it was just,
seven of them, yeah.
Just completely took over. The defense completely took over. And then that was, it was kind of the defense I maybe expected to see a little bit earlier in this year to get those, get his feet settled sooner and get those stops. And that was, you know, you point across the year, that was one of the keys early, not getting off the field. You see what happens when you do it.
Now, I'm going to get back to the game in a moment. It's obviously the decision that was revealed after the game that has people talking to not go to a bowl game. What was your reaction when you heard that?
It was, I think it was initially a bit of surprise, just at the idea that here's a team that had found its stride. And I'm talking only from the football perspective first. Like, from that football perspective, I was a little bit surprised because they'd found their stride, won 4 games in a row, looked really good. I thought the last couple of weeks, fairly dominant overall. I mean, you know, aside from a couple of lapses against Illinois and another, I guess, the 58th point that they'd given up via turnover this season early in that game, overall looked better. So from that perspective, I thought, I'm a little bit surprised that they wouldn't want to play another football game. And maybe they do. I mean, maybe they wouldn't mind playing another football game, but it's the rest of it. And that's where I wasn't surprised one bit. And that's where I'm not being surprised, but also understanding and thinking, hey, good for you, good decision made, that you don't want to go through the rest of it in order to play that game. At some point, I think with this particular season, you reach a level of enough is enough that you don't want to get swabbed at 6:30 every morning, and maybe you do just want to see your parents and your families and your girlfriends without having to go through that, that whole the sacrifice that they gave up. I mean, they were willing to do it back in September and October, and they did it. And I think at this point to say that there's that you need to play a bowl game was over the top, and they choose not to. Perfectly, I completely understand that, and I think that for them, probably the right decision.
It was. It's. And I told this. the people listening earlier on the show that Wednesday, for the first time since March, I was actually physically able to go in to Lash Building. Because the last time I was around them was at a workout in March. Haven't been able to be around them since. So I was asked to come in for a letter of intent day. So it was the first time, Mark, I've been around everybody. And when I walked in, the first thing you walk in is there are all the testing kits. Yeah. And people going over to get the testing kits. After spending 4 hours there and in bits and pieces of conversations, that's where I really finally got the feel from everybody that I talked to how wearing this entire process had been since day one. Not physically, I mean, but it's the ninth straight week of playing a game, but mentally. And that's where I started to now change my thought process as to whether they might go to a bowl game or not. That's at least how I approached it.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned playing nine straight weeks. You don't do that in a 12-game season. You just don't do that even in a normal season, to play 9 weeks. And that's debilitating enough. And James Franklin said after the game that they were thin physically, just beyond COVID testing, beyond all that, beyond, you know, false positives and everything wearing on you emotionally and mentally. They were worn down physically for playing for nine straight weeks. So that, coupled with when we got to talk to Brent Pry a couple of weeks ago, he told us about going over to James Franklin's house on a Thursday night, and he said it was the first time he had been there, I think, during the regular season. And he was taken aback. He said he was taken aback by the fact that walking into this empty house, that James's family had not been there since March, that really struck him as well. And, you know, these are sorts of things that you know about but necessarily don't think about. So, you know, getting these guys on these calls later in the year, you could see the wear on them a little bit. Yeah. You could hear it in their voice, you know. Finishing that out, the senior day game, yes, I think they were absolutely, I think, inclined and thrilled to do that. And getting the home game, had they, you know, I wonder what would have happened had they had to travel to Illinois, if that would have been the situation, whether they would have been really inclined to do that. But getting one more home game, sure, I don't think they feel any, I don't think they felt good about that. Winning that game, I got the sense that, you know, off the field, with everything, you know, surrounding them, the developed off the field, this was the right way to go out. This was the exact way that they wanted to finish it. Record aside.
Yep. All right. So now let's get to back to the game itself. Sean Clifford, in the last four games during the winning streak, 5 touchdown passes, 1 interception. Mm-hmm. Then you add in Will Levis, his touchdown pass to Brent Strange, which was, by the way, a great effort by Strange. So the two quarterbacks combined for 6 touchdowns and 1 pick the last four games. What did that mean to the winning part, especially when you contrast it with the opening games and the turnovers?
Yeah. I remember the touchdown numbers, but it was 8 interceptions through, I guess, those 5 games.
Yes.
And I think he had 12 turnovers. Credited to him on the season, and you know, he knew it. You know, he was incredible. He was open and honest about it. He absolutely knew it, that was, you know, that 12 is by far too many, you know, than what he should be giving up. I think he felt, you know, you could hear it again in his voice over the last couple of weeks. He felt more comfortable with the idea of that quarterback cliche of being a game manager. That early on, I think he pressed, and he knew he pressed, and he tried to press too much, and that led him into situations. That, you know, the first play of the game, that's not, that's not a play designed to go 75 yards for a touchdown.
That's right.
That's a play.
That's right.
You know, that's an RPO. That's, he's going to run. He's going to check. You know, if he's got the throw, he makes it. And Jahan Dotson is, as James Franklin likes to say, you know, you stay ahead of the sticks. That's supposed to get you into 2nd and 3, you know, or, you know, 2nd and 4, something like that. It's not designed to go 75. Jahan made a great play and outraced the defense. So that's a great move. But if that doesn't go 75 and it gets 7 yards, he's at 2nd and 3 there. I think the gradual build of the confidence over those last couple of weeks in those plays that was, you know, the plays that he was making like that weren't turning into 75-yard touchdowns or 70-yard touchdowns, because Jahan Dotson is, you know, head faking everybody. But he's also getting himself ahead of sticks. He's getting himself ahead of the chains, and he's in better situations on second down, better situations on third down, and not trying to do too much. So I think that's where his confidence grew out of the last month.
In the last four games, what was your thought process on where Penn State is? I mean, it's an unusual season, so I think it's hard to gauge where anybody is right now, but what's your thought process on where Penn State is right now, and is it any predictor for what can set up for 2021 or not?
Yeah, the second part of that, I would have no idea, because I'm going to really kind of confine this season into its own asterisk, really.
Yes,
I
agree.
They can use it. If you having the fact that you had on that field, two freshman running backs, three freshman tight ends with a redshirt freshman and Brandon Strange, and, a couple of young linemen, playing and all of that. You got a lot of guys playing time who deserved it and really used it really well, and now they can hit the reset switch on it and come back basically as freshmen again. I think that's an amazing thing. I think the Penn State team we saw over the last 4 weeks is the one I expected to see.
Yeah, me too.
In the beginning of the year. And I wonder, I tried to write this on occasions. I just wonder what would have happened had Michael Penix not been ruled a touchdown on the field. That being ruled a touchdown in overtime on the field, how drastically that changed the season, because I do think that lingered. I think that lingered into the following week against Ohio State. And then it lingered because you're 0-2 in a season with 8 games. And you feel like, this is over. It's already ended for you. But I just think that stretched in. If the schedule is switched and they win a couple of these, they get these games that they win early or whatever. This is the team that I expected to see. I didn't expect to see the mistake-prone team, the turnover team, the team that had a lot of trouble open field tackling, and maybe some of just wide open receivers, break down in coverage kinds of things. That you saw early in occasion in the beginning of the year. That was the team I expected.
Yeah, what I saw the last six quarters is what I expected the whole year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I saw the last six quarters what I expected the entire season, and I agree with you. I think the two-point play by Penix, I think if they had ruled him on the field short, I still go back to that. They'd ruled him on the field short. I think they also would have said, stands as called. I think whatever the ruling on the field was, what they were going to stay with. And and that's just the way it is. I mean, that's just the way it turned out. It's how you react to it. And, finally in the last four games they did. I have to ask you, the bowl thing comes up, and the heck with the Final Four. I can't believe a 9-2 Army team wasn't included. When you've got 9 teams in there that are under 500 playing bowl games.
And I've read around some of that this morning. And, we understand the contracts involved.
Sure.
And that's where, if there would have been Big Ten contracts involved, it very well could have happened the same way as well. Like an Army getting shut out because, a 3-win Big Ten team decides it wants to go. So it could have happened because of those bowl contracts. And you just wonder whether part of me even thinks that that Army is going to get a game somehow, that we are going
to too.
Somehow the BYU Coastal Carolina, something is going to happen. People are going to make this happen because in the the idea of this season. But overall, I think the bowl system's got to be reconsidered, maybe with the Power Five depth of those contracts, that maybe you can that bowls have potentially more open field to work with at the end of the year, and they're not so constrained by 7 deep tie-ins with the Power Five conferences or anything like that. I got to know one of their assistant coaches really well, John Luce, who runs a wonderful football camp in this area at Lafayette College, and he's assistant on that staff. And, you know, just some of the things he's told me in the past of how, like, what cadets go through to play football. I mean, wow. And to think of, you know, they don't get an opportunity to play another football game. Yeah, I hope that changes. I think it might.
Yeah, I think it might, too. Mark, to you and your great family, happy holidays to you. Thanks so much for all the time you
appreciate you, too. Thanks, Steve.